I would like to present a three-part discussion of the roles of those in Klal Yisrael represented by the golden crown of the Mishkan, the Aron HaKodesh, the Talmidei Chachamim, representing those devoted to Torah and its dissemination exclusively, those who are Torasam Umnasam, and the Badei HaAron, the staves of the Ark, indivisible from the Aron itself, which represent the supporters of Torah, those who are involved in a worldly occupation, yet are integral partners in the Torah of the Talmidei Chachamim. The Mishnah says in Kedushin, 82a, Rav Meir says, one is obligated to teach his son an easy and clean occupation and pray to the one from whom one's livelihood in truth emanates. Rav Nuhuroi said, I forgo all occupations and will teach my son only Torah. Seemingly, an argument between two Tanoim exists, whether one is obligated to teach his son a worldly occupation or not. However, the Brisker Rav points out that this argument between Rav Meir and Rav Nuroi is extremely difficult to understand, considering the fact that the Gemara in Erevin 13b says that Rav Meir and Rav Nuroi were in fact the same person. His name was Rav Nuroi, and his nickname was Rav Meir, because he enlightened the eyes of the Jewish people with Torah. The Brisker Rav, open parentheses, Al HaTorah, Parshas Chayisara, explains this enigma by first prefacing the Gemara in Brachas 35b, that brings a seeming contradiction between the following two verses. Lo yomu sefer haTorah hazeh mipicha, dehagisa bo yomu v'layla. The Torah should not depart from your mouth. You should study it day and night. And the second verse, v'yosafta digonecha, you should gather in your grain wine and oil. If in fact one is required to learn Torah without interruption day and night, then when is one permitted to gather in his crops? Rabbi Shmuel reconciles the contradiction, saying that along with the study of Torah, one should integrate a worldly occupation. Somehow, this is still called incessant Torah study, as we will discuss further on. Rav Shimon bar Yochai argues and questions whether one could truly devote himself to Torah study incessantly if he were to plow, plant, fertilize, prune, harvest, and process his produce. Instead, Rav Shimon bar Yochai taught that when one does God's will, then his temporal work will be done by others, non-Jews, who provide a livelihood, leaving us free to study Torah uninterruptedly. Only when we are not doing God's will must we toil in worldly pursuit, securing a livelihood. The Gemara concludes by noting that many people did as Rav Yishmael prescribed and were successful, while many people attempted to do as Rav Shimon bar Yochai prescribed and were not successful. The Brisker Rav explains this unusual ending to the Gemara. In fact, the halacha is as Rav Yishmael, and this is the standard rule. However, the way of Rav Shimon bar Yochai is also an acceptable alternative for those who can fit the prerequisite of doing God's will. Hence, Rav Meir, as the one who taught Torah to the masses, instructed the masses as to the general halach of teaching one's son an honest and easy trade, as per the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. However, as Rav Nuhuroi, the individual father of a specific child, he recognized that his son was capable of reaching the standards necessary to devote himself totally to Torah, as per Rav Shimon bar Yochai's opinion, and hence he would lead him along that path. The Rambam, in Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel, chapter 13, halachas 12 and 13, relates that Shevet Levi was separated from the rest of the Jewish people insofar as they did not inherit a portion in the land of Israel, nor receive any of the spoils of its wars, nor take part in the military exercises, nor do they have worldly occupations. The reason is that they are God's army, specifically designated to learn and teach his Torah and mitzvahs to the Jewish people and to serve as their agents in spiritual matters, such as the temple and sacrificial duties. Hence, God himself provides for their sustenance by demanding that the Jewish people support them with the Matnos Kahuna and Levia, as Trumas and Meiser, etc. The Rambam continues that not only Shevet Levi, but any individual who is inclined to dedicate himself to the same sublime lifestyle of the tribe of Levi, and would remove himself from the mundane pursuits of this world to enhance this dedication, can thereby become sanctified as holy of holies, and God will provide his material needs as he provides for the Kohanim and Levim.
This psak of the Rambam, says the Brisker Rav, reflects the opinion of Shimon Bar Yochai, but it is the operative halacha only for an individual, as opposed to the general psak, according to the view of Rabbi Shmuel, which is for the masses. This is similar to the view of Rav Chaim Volozhiner in Nefesh HaChaim, who also says that Rabbi Shmuel's view is for the masses, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai for the individuals. Based on this principle of the Brisker Rav, that these are two halachically legitimate paths, it behooves us to investigate each one to gain a proper Torah's perspective as to what exactly each path entails and what are its specific parameters. Let us first discuss the general pshat of Rabbi Yishmael. Hanei gimohem minig derech eretz. At first glance, this dictum does not seem to reconcile the contradiction the Gemara presented. If one, in fact, integrates a worldly occupation with Torah study, then his Torah study is not uninterrupted and constant day and night. Rav Chaim Volozhiner explains that one should not allocate time to be occupied with an occupation and not with Torah, but rather during the time he is involved with his occupation, he should also be learning Torah. This, however, is only possible with regards to occupations and endeavors that predominantly involve one's physical being and leave his mind free to think of Torah while he conducts his occupation. However, there are occupations where this would be practically an impossibility. One would not want a brain surgeon reviewing his daf yomi while performing brain surgery. There are other possible ways of explaining Rabbi Shmuel to show how taking out time for one's livelihood can still be considered learning Torah. One idea can be that Rabbi Shmuel understood that the sentence that says that one should be involved with Torah constantly can't be taken literally, for one must eat and sleep and attend to his bodily needs where it's impossible for him to be learning Torah. So when the Torah said to involve oneself in Torah all the time, it meant all the time that a person is not required by his worldly, physical nature to do other things. So Rabbi Shmuel added one more thing to that list, and that's earning a living. Because a human being who doesn't earn a living can't eat, can't live, and therefore that is also not included in the time that the Torah refers to as learning Torah all the time. Another possibility is when one works, he can focus on the Torah directives that concern his specific work and how to perform it properly and faithfully so as not to cheat his employer or customers or employees. If one conducts his business with this constantly in mind, then this too is Torah, not a diversion from Torah. Secondly, one can direct all his attention during the time he is occupied with his worldly pursuits to do them with one singular intent, that they provide him with the means to be able to support himself and his family so that they can learn Torah and perform mitzvahs. This is the meaning of making one's Torah ikar and his malacha aroi, the Torah be the raison d'etre of all his other endeavors. And Miri explains that one who eats on Erev Yom Kippur is considered as if he had fasted 2 days due to the fact that his eating is preparation for and enables him to fast properly. The preparation is part and parcel of the mitzvah and therefore counts as part of the fast itself. Similarly, when one's temporal endeavors are intended to enable him to learn Torah and perform mitzvahs, they become preparations for Torah and mitzvahs and are considered part and parcel of the learning itself. In this vein, Miksav Sofer explains that the wearing of tefillin is considered as learning Torah, for tefillin represent directing one's total thought, emotion, and deed towards Torah in all one's endeavors, and hence all his endeavors become Torah. We can add that perhaps for this reason, night and Shabbos and Yontif are not the time for tefillin. For these times, when one is free from other obligations, he cannot fulfill his requirement to learn Torah indirectly through his tefillin, but rather must devote his time directly to Torah learning. Thirdly, the effort put into earning one's living diverts one from sin and enables one to learn more purely in the times that one has to learn. As the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, it is nice to couple the study of Torah with a worldly occupation, for the effort put into both of them reduces sin. Rabbi Lezer Papo, the author of Pele Yoetz, in his Sefer Elef HaMogen on the Torah, Parshas Bo, gives a homiletical explanation of the following verse. Even our cattle will go along with us. Not one hoof will remain. For from it we will take to serve Hashem, and we do not know how and with what we serve Hashem until we come there. He explains this verse in the following way. Our material pursuits will also accompany us to Olam Haba and be considered as mitzvahs when three conditions are met. Lo sishaer, all negative prohibitions are set aside, i.e. we conduct our business, occupation, honestly according to halacha. Parsa, set aside hay, five times for spiritual pursuits, the three times of davening with a minyan, and two times for Torah study, one during the day and one in the evening. 3. Ki mimenu nikach, from our material pursuits, we take to serve Hashem, that our intention in earning a livelihood is to enable us to learn Torah and perform mitzvahs. Then says the Elef HaMogen, V'anachnu lo neida, ma na'avodes Hashem, we do not know the value of our service until we reach Olam Haba. For it may be that the Balabayas, who fulfills these conditions perfectly, will be valued even on par with the one who is a Talmid Chacham and devotes himself entirely to Torah study. This presents a partial description of the one who pursues the derech of Rabbi Yishmael. In our next part, we will discuss the parameters of Shemit Levi, those who follow the path of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and the harmony and interrelationship between both paths that create the perfection of Klal Yisrael. Part 2. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai resolved the contradiction between the verse that exhorts us to study Torah without interruption day and night, and the verse that permits us to gather in our grain, by explaining that the first verse applies when we are osin ritzono shel makom, when we fulfill God's will, and the second when ein osin ritzono shel makom, when we do not fulfill God's will. If you understand this designation literally, then the verse, the Asafta Digadecha, applies to a time when we are not doing God's will. Yet the context within which that verse is found is the Parsha V'hoya Im Shamoa Tishmu, which seems to describe a period in which the Jewish people are in fact doing mitzvahs, loving God, and serving Him with all their heart and soul. How can this be designated as Ein Osim Ritzono Shel Makom? The Marsha in Brachos 35b responds to this question in the following way. Although they are fulfilling God's will with heart and soul, it is not with the perfection of serving Him with all their material possessions. Hence the word Ma'odeichem is not mentioned in this Parsha as it is in the first Parsha of Shema. The Vilna Gaon, quoted in Ein Yaakov Chidushi HaGaonim, elaborates further, saying that the first parsha of Shema is in the singular and refers to the individuals who can serve Hashem perfectly with heart, soul, and material possessions. The second parsha is in the plural and refers to the masses who cannot reach that perfection and are hence described in a relative manner as Ein Osim Ritzono Shel Makom, not fulfilling God's will. Permit me to elucidate this idea further. There are three points that can be emphasized in the phrase Osim Ritzono Shel Makom that point to the difference between the sublime level and the level at which the Jewish people, although they are observing all the mitzvahs, are not Osim Ritzono Shel Makom. First, emphasizing Osim, literally making God's will. A Jew can reach a level where his Torah, mitzvahs, and tefillah actually initiate God's will. As the verse says, Ritzon Yireyav Yaseh, God performs the will of those who fear Him. This is a level far beyond Mekayimei Ritzono Shel Makom, observing God's will, but rather making God's will. Second, emphasizing Ritzono, God's will, as opposed to God's commands. One can fulfill the commands themselves to the letter of the law, but not go beyond that to contemplate the implications of those commands, to be enhanced and applied to one's total lifestyle and outlook. This is the lifni v'shuras hadin, beyond the letter of the law, that is classified as doing God's will rather than merely his commands. And finally, by emphasizing shalmakom, God's will, as opposed to doing what is in one's own best interest, albeit conforming to God's will. The difference being, as the Kutzker Rebbe explained about the love of God, one person loves God as he loves herring, where the love of the herring is but a manifestation of self-love, since one enjoys eating herring because it brings him pleasure. Similarly, one can love God because he has concluded that fulfilling God's will is what is best for him and will bring him pleasure and reward. Alternately, God may be truly the object of his love and his service totally altruistic, without self-interest playing any role, the second type of love being far more sublime and pure than the first. Hence the difference between doing God's will, or what in fact is one's own will, which conforms to God's will. These three factors are signified by the deletion of the word ma'odechem in the parasha Mahayim Shamoa, designating it as ein osim ritzono shalmakom, where the measure of devoting everything one has to the service of Hashem is missing. Hence, the individual who can follow the path of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai must approach that path as osim ritzono shalmakom, with total dedication, heart, soul, and material possessions, accepting the yoke of Torah totally and minimizing his concern for the mundane pursuits of this world, as the Rambam describes in Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel. On the other hand, one who attempts to use Torah simply as a means to earn a living, without devotion to Torah being the prime motivating factor, and the remuneration merely a necessity to promote one's ability to maintain one's devotion to Torah in Klal Yisrael, is guilty of using the Torah as a spade to dig with, thus desecrating the Torah and God's name, as the Rambam strongly states in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Chapter 3, Halacha 10, only one who is willing to devote all he has, physically and spiritually, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is worthy of having God take care of his physical needs. The Sfarno to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos 4:7 clarifies this matter as follows. There is no doubt that one who uses a holy object for secular purposes desecrates its holiness, and thus is liable to a death penalty. Since Torah is holy of holies, one who makes from it a secular occupation, whose sole purpose is to secure for himself a livelihood, or to secure temporal honor, desecrates this holiness. However, one who seeks to increase his personal Torah study and observance, or to aid others in their Torah study and observance, this can be compared to utilizing a holy utensil for a holy purpose. And this intention will be affirmed when one utilizes his time to teach or judge, and concerning this, Chazal say that those who judge or teach Torah receive their wages for the monies donated to the temple, and similarly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded to give Trum and Meiser to the Kohanim and Levim. And therefore, one who receives material support through learning or teaching Torah or other mitzvahs is not designated as gaining pleasure or benefit from the Torah for which one is punished, but rather Torah and mitzvahs are not considered as worldly pleasure or benefit. Mitzvahs lav lahenas nitnu. To further elucidate this idea, the Sfarno in Parshas Baaloscha describes the menorah from which emanates the light of God's presence in the world as representing those who branch to the right of that center flame, who are devoted to Torah exclusively, and those to the left who are involved also in a worldly occupation. They are in fact one indivisible unity, and with both sides face the middle, and direct their attention solely to Shem Shamayim, from both of them together emanates the divine life, light.
Those to the left create the basis of a functioning society that provides a supply of food, clothing, and human services necessary to provide the framework in which one can effectively dedicate himself to Torah, and also direct individual support for the ones devoted to Torah, while those on the right create the spiritual basis necessary for the very existence of the world and the functioning of Klal Yisrael. And more specifically, they teach, guide, and inspire the Jewish people and provide them with their spiritual sustenance. Further, it would seem that there are in fact three branches of those involved in a worldly occupation corresponding to three branches of those totally involved in Torah. On the left side, we find the following three groups: those that produce the materials needed for society, comprising occupations in agriculture and industry; those that bring those materials to the public, comprising occupations in business and transportation; and service professions comprising doctors, lawyers, plumbers, electricians, etc. Similarly, on the right side, there are three types of individuals who make Torah their avocation: those who devote their time to learning Torah, who represent Shevet Yisachar. They provide the spiritual materials needed to sustain society and correspond to their material counterparts to the left. They are described as those who learn in order to teach, the minimum intention in learning, to share one's knowledge with others. However, there's a higher level, lilmod amanas lasos, learning in order to make others learn and observe. One who accepts not only the yoke of Torah study, but the yoke of responsibility to Klal Yisrael to promote and build Torah. These are the Kohanim, who comprise the Mechanchim, Dayonim, Rabbonim, Rashi Yeshiva, Rashi Kolulim, etc., who subjugate themselves to the Klal and relinquish the luxury of learning Torah as a fulfillment of their own individual mitzvah alone. There is a significant difference between Shevet Levi and Shevet Yisachar, insofar as Yisachar had to personally arrange his parnasa by striking a deal with Zvulun and sharing his reward with him, while Shevet Levi was taken care of by God's command to support them with Trumas and Maisras. The one who subjugates himself to the Tzibur, in addition to his devotion to the Torah, becomes the responsibility of the Tzibur. This then is the second branch of those who serve the community and who correspond to their material counterparts of service occupations to the left. And lastly, the Levi part of Shevet Levi comprises those who devote themselves to create the framework of the Torah world, administrators, fundraisers, oskim b'tzorchei tzibur b'emunah, who are not directly involved in Torah study or instruction, but are the spiritual transporters and entrepreneurs of the Torah world. Each branch of the menorah had on it various ornaments: gevi'im, cups; kaftorim, spheres; and prachim, flowers. Perhaps they signify the following: the cups represented that each branch has to be ready to receive inspiration, influence, and support from the other branches, as the cup receives and stores. Hence, there were three on each branch. The prachim, the flowers, represented that the individual of each branch has to seek to grow by utilizing their individual portion to its sublime manner, the Shem Shammai, and that growth results in the perfection of themselves and the totality of the Jewish people, represented by the spheres, the kaftorim. Thus, the branches of the menorah, when they all face towards the center and perform their duties l'shem shamayim, and in addition, by facing the center, face each other, respecting, admiring, and working together in harmony, cause the light of Torah and the divine presence to illuminate the world.
Part 3. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to relate to Bnei Yisrael, Re'ei Karasi B'Shein B'Tzalu Ben Uri Ben Hur. See that I have called the name of B'Tzalu, and I have imbued him with the knowledge and understanding and wisdom. Sfarno translates the word Re'ei as to contemplate and to ponder. What exactly is there to ponder about God's calling the name of B'Tzalu? Perhaps the idea is as follows. Two crucial lessons can be learned from the Tzal's designation as the architect and builder of the Mishkan. Firstly, Bezalel was a very talented individual. His talents were many and varied, spanning the technical, artistic, and spiritual spheres. It is clear that Bezalel received these talents from HaKadosh Baruch Hu as divine gifts, since he was a slave in Egypt his entire life and could not have developed them or enhanced them on his own. This, then, is the first lesson to be contemplated. Every individual is likewise bestowed with talents, abilities, and capabilities unique to him by Hashem. This is, in essence, contained in the name that he has. Chazal say that, in fact, every person has four names. The name Hashem gives him, the name his parents give him, the name given to him by his friends, and finally the name he makes for himself. Perhaps the meaning of this medrash is that a person's talents and abilities include those divinely ordained, those inherent in his heredity from his parents, and those enhanced by his environment. However, the main factor is how he develops and enhances those potential abilities, capabilities, and talents, which is the name he ultimately makes for himself. What is required to recognize his abilities and talents and appreciate the divine gift he thereby embodies? Secondly, it is clear that Bezalel was imbued with these talents, abilities, and capabilities specifically to enable him to build the Mishkan. Likewise, everyone is invested with unique talents and capabilities to be used in the service of Hashem and Klal Yisrael, so that he can achieve his unique portion in Torah and contribute towards the perfection of the Mishkan of God's presence among the Jewish people. Since God invests everyone with potential, we become responsible to use the potential and direct it to promoting Torah and Avodas Hashem. Every ability demands a response, and the response to an ability is responsibility. Every individual is different. Everyone's talents and abilities are unique to them. Hence, every individual's portion in Torah and path in life is different. It behooves one to discover himself and direct his efforts along the path best suited for him, to use his unique potential in service of Hashem. For some, that is the path of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, in one of the three branches of those for whom Torah is their exclusive pursuit. And for others, the path is that of Rabbi Shmuel, where worldly occupation can be integrated and directed to serve Torah purposes and goals. Chazal tell us that the menorah was the most difficult vessel to fashion, and ultimately Moshe threw the gold into the fire, and it was divinely fashioned. Perhaps in light of our previous presentation, this hints to the fact that ultimately Hashem guides one to the part of the menorah that he is to represent, and leads him from above to this ultimate vocation and place in Klal Yisrael. However, one must make the effort to direct himself in the way he can achieve his potential and utilize his capabilities to their greatest degree for his own perfection and the perfection of Klal Yisrael. This involves seeking advice from one's parents, Rebbeim, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbonim, etc. Those who know him well and are equipped to direct him with advice and Das Torah. In addition, those who are now learning in yeshivas and girls in seminaries must take the following into consideration. Although we have said that the path of the majority is the path of Rabbi Shmuel to integrate Torah into a worldly occupation, one must remember that those who are fortunate to have benefited from an intense Torah education and have reached levels of intense Torah study past high school are in fact a small minority of Klal Yisrael. They are a fraction of a percent of the total Jewish population. If the individuals who comprise Shevet Levi will not come from their ranks, from where will they come? If the Bnei HaYeshiva and seminaries will not seriously consider devoting themselves exclusively to Torah vocations as Mechanchim, Rabbonim, Rosh Yeshiva, Kollel members, and administrators, out of all those who comprise the structure of the Torah world and their spouses, then who then will consider it and from where else will these positions be fulfilled? If Hashem blessed one with the opportunity to receive an intense Torah education, he expects one to utilize it to its fullest potential. Hence, before a Ben Torah summarily chooses a path other than one of the three branches to the right of the menorah for himself, he must first be absolutely sure that this is really the path that fits his unique abilities and capabilities, and this must be done by combining two factors. First, one must seek advice and direction from Das Torah that knows him well and can assess the direction he should pursue and how exactly he should navigate that direction. Secondly, regardless of which path he is going to ultimately pursue, one must seek to maintain the maximum time to be intensely involved in Torah study. This is necessary for everyone to make the Torah his main central focus and his occupation secondary and subordinate. Only one who is first steeped in Torah can hope to achieve this goal. Furthermore, as conditions prevail today, especially in Chutz La'aretz, where one's total years of full-time Torah study before marriage are few and very limited, it is wise for everyone to spend some time after marriage in an intense total Torah environment, even if not with a commitment to the path of Shevet Levi, but at least as both an opportunity to test the waters and see if one is geared to join the ranks of Shevet Levi as his life's vocation, and also to base one's married life on a foundation of pure Torah living that will serve as a reservoir of strength from which one can draw inspiration and direction no matter which path one subsequently chooses for his life. This will aid one who in fact assumes a worldly occupation or profession in developing the proper balance and perspective to put Torah in the central position of one's life. Ultimately, both those who devote themselves to Torah exclusively and those who integrate Torah with a worldly occupation, if they direct their attention to the central divine eternal flame and make its enhancement the goal of their lives, and then facing each other and working together in harmony, will bring each individual to his ultimate perfection individually as an integral component of the perfection of Klal Yisrael, as well as hasten the day that the entire world will enjoy that perfection in harmony of goal and purpose with the coming of Mashiach soon in our days.